local Republican Party office in ashes today after what authorities in one North Carolina town say was a firebombing. There was graffiti, I understand, painted on the outside as well, referring to, quote, Nazi Republicans. The pictures show a lot of destruction, and the good news was this was overnight and nobody was working.
Jin Haipeng and Chen Dong are the two astronauts on board the Shenzhou 11 spacecraft. Jin Haipeng will serve as the commander of the mission. It will be Jin's third space flight following his Shenzhou 7 mission in 2008. And Shenzhou 9 mission in 2012.
The FBI has foiled a terrorist bomb plot in Kansas.
Three men are accused of planning to blow up an apartment complex in Garden City. That complex is home to a mosque and about 120 Somali refugees. FBI agents with the Kansas City field office were in the thick of the 8-month-long investigation.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to The Opening Bell. Welcome to another edition of the program. Welcome to another work week, another business day. Today is October 17th, 2016. 5:10 in the morning. Glad to have you along with us. Lots to cover this morning. Later in the program, we're going to be checking in with one of the CEO spotlights we did earlier this year with Ballot Ready, the group that's been putting together all kinds of election information on your phone, on an app. We'll see how things are going with them now that it's crunch time just ahead of the election. We'll get to that in the second half of our program this morning. In the CEO spotlight today, the CEO of the Adler Planetarium in Chicago. We'll get to that, too, coming up. But first, to the WGN Market Desk. And on the markets this morning, the Associated Bank WGN Market Desk, Dow futures look like they're in the negative this morning pretty solidly, off about 52 points. The NASDAQ and S&P futures are lower as well. As you heard Vic mention, most of the markets around the world are lower, especially in Europe this morning, off almost a full percent in London and in Europe and in Germany, I should say. And in Asia, most of the indices are lower as well, with the exception of the Nikkei. Again, in this country, we're looking for a lower open on Wall Street when the bell rings at about 8:30 Chicago time. A couple of stories making the news this morning while you slept with the business. One of them involving the U.S. electric car maker Tesla says it plans to start working with the Japanese electronics company Panasonic Corporation on solar energy. Panasonic had no immediate comment on this, on Tesla's statement on its corporate blog that the companies have signed a non-binding letter to begin working together. Also today, Brexit could cost the UK its spot among top five investment destinations. Britain, this is according to a new survey released today, by the way. It is a half-yearly report of business executives. Consulting firm EY said uncertainties related to Brexit vote are discouraging potential investors, particularly from Europe, from planning deals in that country, again, in the wake of Brexit. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, some stocks of local interest we're keeping a close eye on. McDonald's is off almost 1.5% this morning in pre-market trading. United Airlines, United Continental is also in lower territory this morning, as is USG Corporation, almost 0.5%. Some of the stocks doing well today include Hyatt Hotels and Groupon, up almost 2.5%.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, investors hope for another boost today. The Dow finished up 39.5 points on Friday to 18,138. The Standard & Poor's 500 inched up 0.5 point to 21,32. The NASDAQ composite gained about a point. Britain has lost its place as one of the top five investment destinations. A survey of business executives says uncertainties related to the Brexit vote are discouraging potential investors, particularly from Europe, from planning deals in Great Britain. Tesla's chief executive has pushed back a big announcement originally scheduled for today to Wednesday. Analysts suggest that Elon Musk may be focusing on the Tesla Autopilot, a system implicated in at least two fatal accidents. And sorry, Bozo, you won't find your red nose or floppy shoes at Target. That retailer has removed Halloween clown costumes from its shelves around the country and from its website in response to creepy clown scares that have happened around the world. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
The Adler Planetarium in Chicago is gone from laying off people a few years ago to a strong stance to a now a slogan that says Space is freaking awesome, and they can barely keep the place open with a lot of people coming and going. Their annual attendance is up, and the CEO of the Adler Planetarium is with us today, Michelle Larson, who took over a number of years ago, and since she's taken over, the attendance is up, and things are looking well for the Adler Planetarium. We're glad to have Michelle with us this morning. I suppose, Michelle, let's start with just that, and that is, how are things going at the Adler? Space is freaking awesome, and you've got lots of people coming and going, don't you?
So we're really interested in helping people recognize that there is a lot of excitement about discovery and science, and any of the letters in STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, are all about the excitement of discovery. Space is our medium, and the tagline, space is freaking awesome, is really about inciting in you that sense of awe, and also to try and motivate you to say, game on, let's find something, let's explore, let's do it together.
Yeah, let's, because on the show, we like to say we like to make people think, but I think it's also great to say, let's discover, too.
Absolutely. We want to be kind of that place in your life, if you come visit us, where you do feel that emotional urge to ask questions, to try things, to fail, to build something that doesn't work at all and try to figure out why. It's really as much emotional as it is intellectual.
We deal with a lot of numbers here on the show, too, because it's a business show. Give our listeners a sense of the numbers. Where since you came to Adler, what has the attendance gone from to?
Yeah, so we're very excited. Last year, 2015, which is the last year we have full attendance count for, we were at 550,000 visitors, and that's the first time the museum has been over 500,000 visitors since 1993. So we broke a 23-year record, which we're very excited about. And even more exciting, this year, we're on track here in where we are now, we're on track to beat that record from last year.
I remember the last time I spoke with you, we did an interview, and there was a lot of concern. This was maybe 7 years ago, I think. There was a lot of concern about the Adler and how things were going in the future, and your job, I think, when you came in was to turn it around. What's changed besides space being freaking awesome?
Yeah, so I've been here just about 3.5 years. It'll be 4 years in January, okay. So I'm about that long. What we're doing is, as we were talking about earlier, trying to connect with everybody's sense of awe. You know, these questions in science these days are big questions, and it takes big teams of people to solve them. So we love to say all minds are welcome at the Adler, but all minds are needed at the Adler. So we're an accessible and approachable and genuinely welcoming place where we want you to explore space with us, and that's resonating with people.
There's also, you mentioned STEM. This is a huge part of education these days. How much of that is are you involved with? Is the Adler involved with? Do you have outreach to schools to sort of make that, to rise those tides even higher?
Yeah, so we feel very strongly that students and adults need two things in their lives. They need some of the formal tools. They need the discipline and the structure that comes with formal education to get those tools. We want to be something different in their lives. I call it the 1-2 punch. They have that punch. We want to be the place where it's open exploration. We have a community design lab where we post a challenge, and that's the end. There's a garage-like looking wall of stuff. It looks a little like your junk drawer, and we say, go, meet the challenge. And the first question we get from people is, well, what do I do first? The Adler wants to be a place where we say, we don't know. It's in you. What do you want to do first? How do you solve this problem? And how you solve it's going to look differently than someone else solves it. So teachers are giving us feedback that we're a real partner to them in their education because we're a place where students are challenged and then have to bring to the table the tools that they're learning in other places to figure out how to use them.
Based on that interaction, how would you gauge and judge how we're doing with STEM education in schools? Is it lacking? Is there more needed?
I don't think there's more needed. I think that we don't always capture the sense of science or any of the letters in STEM. It truly is a sense of wandering and discovery in the most exciting way, not in a bad way. And it's that motivation for why we might want to do the science. I love to say that we would like students to run out of the Adler saying, would someone teach me geometry? I have a planet to find. Yeah. If we can remember that there's a lot of motivation behind why we might want to learn those things, I think it would be helpful.
There's a wonderful history here in Chicago, too, about that discovery, with the history of actually who built the Adler Planetarium, who was behind that, but also with the discoverer of Pluto. You have number of astronauts who are from the Chicago area. John Grunsfeld, who's, I believe, his grandfather
built the Ernst Grunsfeld was the architect on the Adler.
So there's that wonderful history. Is that something you share with people, too, to say, hey, here's how these folks started. They looked up into the sky, and that's how they began.
Absolutely. We love the stories that everyday people make big discoveries, and you might be turned on by being an architect. We're not looking for everyone to become a scientist. We're looking for everyone to appreciate the role that science has in their lives through architecture or being an astronaut. I myself was not turned on to astronomy and science until I was 22 years old. I already had a bachelor's degree in hand, still wandering and not knowing what I wanted to do, and it was looking up at the moon, and someone literally slipped a pair of binoculars into my hands while I was looking up at the moon, and it blew my mind. Seeing all of the craters and the shadows and things that you just don't realize. I encourage everyone to take a cheap pair of binoculars and point them at the moon, and you'll be blown away.
Yeah, or give them a telescope, which is sort of what Adler started doing as well. He's taking the tools and giving the tools to people in the community, young people especially, scopes in the city.
Absolutely. We very much are committed to being here at the Adler, there in the communities, and everywhere around the globe. And one of our primary there efforts out into the communities is Scopes in the City, as you mentioned. We partner with the Chicago Public Libraries and the Park District, and we bring telescopes to neighborhood locations. My favorite part is we partner with the teenager docents at the library to operate these telescopes to show the communities and the neighborhoods the moon and Saturn and the stars. And then there are binoculars and telescopes available for checkout at the libraries and teenagers there who know how to use them. So it's really about us coming to you so that you realize you can do this too. It's not just us that has the ability.
It is one of those things where when I come to the Adler, I don't know where to go first. Do you guys gauge where people go first when they come in? Do you have a sense of what the most popular thing is at the Adler Planetarium?
Many of the popular things are the things you can do something with. We recently renovated our Mission Moon exhibit to tell the story of Captain Lovell's life. It's always been a moon exhibit, but now you go through what Captain Lovell did along his career. So there's a stomp rocket station, because when Jim was a teenager, Jim Lovell wanted to launch rockets, and now you can launch rockets. We have a Apollo 13 crisis room in that exhibit where you have to power up the limb and stay within the electrical constraints. So people absolutely gravitate towards where they can learn something, but they can learn something by doing something.
One of my fondest memories, and the one thing I'll always treasure, is I was there for a press event once, and Captain Lovell was there, and he sort of walked a couple of us reporters around showing us things that he had given to the Adler that are there. And he said, you know what the most popular thing is? It was the diaper, right? Has he told you this story?
He has. Yeah. It's true. Biology is something we all experience, and we want to understand how that works in space.
So tell me about how things are moving forward. What do you have coming up? What are the exhibits at Adler as we move into the last part of this year and the beginning of next?
Absolutely. So we just premiered a new sky show called Planet Nine, and it showcases a new approach that we're taking at the Adler, which is to work with frontier scientists. We have frontier scientists on staff at the Adler, but also frontier scientists around the world, to showcase science just as it's being discovered. So Planet Nine premiered in the spring, right when Mike Brown and his team at Caltech were announcing that there might be a ninth planet in the solar system. So I encourage people to come see that show, because it is absolutely cutting edge. We have a live broadcast lecture coming up at the end of October that's about gravitational waves. Gravitational waves were discovered and announced. They were discovered about a year ago and announced this last spring. So again, in the spirit of being cutting edge and frontier, we're showcasing some of those things. That's called the Kavli Full Dome Lecture. I encourage you to look it up. And then next year, there's a total eclipse of the sun the path of that total eclipse is going to pass through the entire United States. It's a thin path, so you have to travel to it. It will go through Carbondale, Illinois. Mm-hmm. So the Adler is going to celebrate the year of the eclipse by opening a Chasing Eclipses exhibit all about the history of chasing eclipses, and then leading up to where we can all see that eclipse. In Chicago, it'll be a 90% coverage.
And that's a very rare thing. It won't happen again, I think, probably in our lifetime.
It will happen again. Just so happens through the United States again in 2024.
Okay.
So, but you are correct. It is not all that common, and we just happened to get a twofer here in 2017 and 2024.
There's been some news over the last few days about how we saw Elon Musk announce his ambitious plan to get humans to Mars, and that's very exciting. And I talked to Mark Hammergren recently from the Adler about that. And we both agree it's sort of nice to see somebody put that plan on paper and get it going. But the news is that the cosmic rays, that the actual health impacts on humans going that distance they've been testing on rats is not good. We've known this, but it's even, I think, worse than we kind of thought it was. If you could talk to me a little bit about those challenges.
Absolutely. So cosmic rays are high energy protons, high energy particles, protons and electrons. So they're not odd in what they are, but they are energetic in that they're moving very fast. They come from the sun. They come from all things in the universe. We're very lucky to live on this planet because our atmosphere protects us from most high energy, all high energy cosmic rays that could harm us. It's really a shield around us. So there are two cosmic rays that go through your head every second. It's a favorite saying of mine, but they are not of energies that are causing trouble, nor are they of the number of them that are causing trouble. It is true once you leave our atmosphere and you go to travel into the solar system that you're then not protected by the Earth's atmosphere and you're going to be bombarded by these high energy particles. The astronauts are bombarded by them. We know when the sun has an eruption, there's a large spewing of cosmic rays, and we tell our astronauts to take cover in leaded, shielded places in the space station. When you go to Mars, you get even more exposure because you're there that much longer. And the challenge with protecting is the only way we know how to protect is to shield ourselves in something heavy like lead, and it's too expensive to launch lead up into the space. So it is a real challenge. It is why there are mechanical challenges that Elon Musk is addressing for how we get there mechanically. There are biological challenges that we have not figured out yet.
Yeah, some of the mice and rats that they were testing developed dementia, and they sort of had fried brains, for lack of a better way to discuss it. So it's one of those things that's concerning.
Yeah, they're high energy particles, and when they go through your brain, they lodge energy into your brain. Again, we're safe here on Earth because of the atmosphere, but once you leave that atmosphere, it's a real concern.
When you're at the Adler and you see kids come in, do you think one of these youngsters could possibly solve this problem one of these days?
Absolutely. So one of our sky shows is called Cosmic Wonder. And in that sky show, we talk about the mysteries of the past that we've made progress on and the mysteries of today that we still don't understand. And there is a line in the show that says maybe someone in this room will help us figure it out. And we mean that. The potential to discover, the potential to solve these mysteries of the universe lies with any one of us.
What does the future of Adler look like? Is it one where virtual reality will become a bigger role, or will we see more of the sky? I know there's a lot of concern about we're losing darkness, where we can't actually see up into the sky anymore. What does the future hold?
So I want to address both those issues. So you mentioned virtual reality. That's absolutely a part of our future. This live dome lecture, the Kavli full dome lecture that I mentioned earlier, will also be broadcast to our YouTube channel, and using Google Cardboard and U2 360, anyone can watch that live show in virtual reality with a Google Cardboard. And we're very proud to be premiering that live content stream. We think we're one of the first to ever do that. So that will be on October 28th that's available. So, of course, we want to stay fresh and modern with technology. That said, there is no substitute for a dark sky. My family and I all grew up rural in the western part of the United States, and the dark skies we still travel to every summer to get some of that experience. So we're concerned about that, and we have a project at the Adler where our teen we have teen interns that work with us, and we have teenagers all across the city who interact with us. They're doing a night sky survey, a light pollution survey. They're using photometers. They're taking data from their own Chicago neighborhoods, and they're going to put together a report about the levels of light pollution across the city. It's truly something we can get on top of. We have the technology. We have the ability. It's a waste of energy. It's a waste of money to be sending photons up and out. We need that light down where we want to be able to see. And it's just time that we stop sending it in all directions.
Because it really is sad to think that there are people, and I think the report that I saw said there are people, including children, obviously, on the planet, who've never seen stars in the sky.
Many of the teenagers working on this project with us, so we took a trip out to the sand dunes to a darker sky location so they understood what they were measuring, because you can't say, please measure the light in the sky, if they don't realize the sky isn't supposed to be lit up. So absolutely, these same students that we're working with, that was the case.
It's awe-inspiring. I grew up around here too, so much of my life I've not been able to see that, but when I finally did go, and you see, you know, in Arizona or one of these dark places, you're like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's our place, right? Yeah. We are, after all, just a rock that's orbiting around a fiery ball called the sun, and we are out there in that space, and we need to remember that that's our surroundings.
And it's sort of primal too, because that's what we did back, you know, before there was stuff.
We did.
We looked at the sky a lot.
We also learned to navigate by the sky. We also, as we were discussing earlier, learned about ourselves by studying things in the sky. We told great stories by making constellations. There's a lot of human connection and knowledge that comes from being able to see the sky.
So things are going well at the Adler, but I bet you wouldn't mind if more people became members.
Oh, absolutely. Membership is something we would love to see an increase in. You know, there's a phenomenon in the United States towards transactional savings. And so any museum has those people that do the math at the door and say, okay, I should buy a membership. It's going to save me some money. There's a lot of benefits to being a member beyond that. We have a wonderful membership communication piece that tells you about all these kinds of science things we've been talking about in an accessible way, and our programming and access to all of our shows. So we're doing a push to try and have more members, because members are a part of our family and we want to have that family grow.
Michelle Larson is the CEO of the Adler Planetarium in Chicago in our CEO Spotlight today. You can learn more at adlerplanetarium.com.org. You can also check them out this week in Museum Week in Chicago, which runs through the 23rd with discounted admission.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell. It is 5:41 on this Monday edition. If you've been listening to The Opening Bell since we started off at the beginning of the year, you know that we have previewed quite a few different companies and organizations. One of them is Ballot Ready, and we're happy to do a checkup with the Chicago-based organization group as they get ready for the big day. This is crunch time for Ballot Ready, which basically puts all of the information about candidates in an app on your phone. And the CEO of that company, Ballot Ready, is Alex Nimshevsky, and she's with us this morning. Good morning, Alex.
Hey, Steve. It's great to be back.
Well, I know this is crunch time, so I know your time is money, and you're probably under it in a big way, but that's why we wanted to check in with you to see how things were going at Ballot Ready.
They're going very well. I think last time I talked to you, I said I wasn't going to be stressed at all. I was going to feel really calm.
Right.
That is not the case. I'm a little more stressed than I thought.
Yeah.
But everything is going better than we expected.
I actually saw and heard you on a national news organization last week, and I thought, well, that's wonderful. It was NPR, and they were doing a profile of you, and I thought, well, that's really cool that you're there. But at the same time, I could tell that you sounded a little bit more stressed than when we had you on before, because because you really are doing something that's not being done in the election, this election cycle, and that is providing information about the candidates and not just this stuff that we've been hearing about the two main candidates.
Exactly. So we provide information on every candidate on the ballot, comptrollers, water reclamation commissioners, all the judges, and sometimes finding information about them is harder than you'd expect.
Because I know when we had you on, you were telling us, and I still can't believe it, there are some organizations that don't even put this information up on their websites.
Exactly. They don't. And then, you know, they don't even have websites sometimes. And, you know, we'd have to make phone calls, send faxes, make more phone calls. And so we get the information eventually, but it takes a lot of work and time.
Is that been one of the biggest struggles of Ballot Ready, or are there other bigger ones?
That's definitely the biggest. Definitely the biggest.
Are you surprised at how much air is being stolen from the room from the two main candidates for presidency from all of the other down ballot issues and races?
I'm surprised that it's not more. I think no matter how people feel about either candidate, whether they're more excited than they ever have or more disappointed than they've ever been, their vote has so much more power at the local level. So I think people that we talk to are really excited about being able to actually know who the candidates are and know information about them before they go into the voting booth.
So give our listeners again a sense of what it is that they will get when they download the app, Ballot Ready, and put it on their phone and have this in front of them.
So we're on a phone and we're also on desktop. You just type in ballotready.org. You type in your address and we show you every candidate and referendum that will be on your ballot. And we aggregate background information like their stances on issues, who endorses them, their previous experience. So then you can research the candidates, click the one you want to save, and then by the time when you want to vote, you have a list of all the candidates that you want to vote for. Or you can pull it up in the voting booth and research it right there.
And that's the other thing that people, I think, still don't understand is that they will be able to take this into the ballot booth with them, won't they? It's not illegal to take your phone into the ballot booth.
Exactly. That's correct. We also have the ability, you can print your list if you are so inclined, but you can take your phone in.
So you've been doing this around the country, so it's not just here in Illinois. We want our listeners to understand how big of a project this has been for you. You've been nationwide with this, haven't you?
Right. Right now, we're live in 10 states.
What kind of challenge has that presented, just the giantness of that?
So it means we're getting a lot more emails from voters who've used the site, and most of the time they're very nice. Sometimes they're like, oh, there's a bug and we try to fix it right away. Or sometimes they're like, oh, you should add this new feature. That would be really helpful to me. And that takes a lot of our time. But it's obviously a great problem because it means people are finding the site useful.
Absolutely. Are you? Is this going to be a regular thing now, do you think? Have you caught on enough where people love this enough that Ballot Ready will be back election after election?
Yeah, we're covering 20 elections next year.
Wonderful. So give us a sense, too, of just this election. Are you surprised at how this has all turned out? Because I know when we talked last, it was just still sort of shaping up. But did you ever guess it would be like this?
Not exactly like this. I think everyone's pretty surprised. But especially for the presidential election, obviously, I think Election Day is going to be very exciting to see how many people, because we know Trump's supporters are, a lot of them are people who don't normally vote. So I'm very curious to see how many of them actually turn out. Could be very exciting.
When you hear people say, you know what, I don't like either of these candidates, I'm just not going to go vote. What immediately goes into, crosses your mind?
I feel very disappointed in them. And I just want to say, even if you don't like the presidential candidates, you're going to have so many other candidates and ballot measures on your ballot. So you might as well do the research and go vote for those candidates.
Yeah. Is it possible? Because I think another thing that people think is that if they don't vote for one candidate, they soil their ballot or something and they can't vote for all of the rest. That's not really true, is it?
That is not true. You can vote for anyone, any race on the ballot.
Yeah.
You don't have to complete the whole thing.
So Alex is out there working hard. People, don't say that you're not going to go vote, because she's absolutely right. There's so many issues, not just here in Illinois, but everywhere on the ballot that are very important and need your attention. Alex, good to chat with you. I know you're stressed. Good luck as you head into the election season, and we can't wait to have you on again to see how things went and do a wrap-up.
Yeah, thank you so much, Steve.
Alex Nimchevsky is the CEO of Ballot Ready. You can find them online and get more information, download their guides, get all of the information, put it on your phone if you want, at ballotready.org.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:52. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow futures is still off about 48 points this morning. NASDAQ futures and S&P futures off as well. Crude oil is trading lower, so is silver and gold pre-market. Let's get the latest on the commodities and agriculture this morning. Good morning, Ori and Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. And as we start this trading week, we look back to last Friday, which was a fairly positive day in the grain market, with wheat gaining 4.5 cents, corn gaining 4 cents, soybeans gaining 6.5 cents in the nearby contracts, and helping, of course, the fact that China signed an agreement at a ceremony in Des Moines, Iowa on Friday to buy 5.1 million tons of U.S. soybeans. And according to the U.S. Soybean Export Council, those soybeans are valued at $2.1 billion. The purchase agreements were signed by 7 of the top 10 soybean buyers in China, and U.S. sellers included grain traders such as ADM, Bunge, and Cargill. So we looked at, again, China having a major role in the strength in the soybean market. And last Friday, we ended the market with a little bit of a recovery in the cattle trade at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. The October cattle contract ended Friday up $1.50, and the October feeder cattle contract up 65 cents. Well, this is going to be a busy week. I'll be in Indianapolis Wednesday through Saturday covering the National FFA Convention Annual Convention. 60,000 people expected to be there for that. And in Moultrie, Georgia, the Sunbelt Expo gets underway Tuesday for its 3-day run through Thursday. So have a good week. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
You too, Orion. We will definitely be tuned in for your visit to the FFA this week. So we'll be interested to see how that goes for you. On now, the WGN Associated Bank market outlook for Monday, October 17th. Here's a couple of things that could drive the markets for today. The Federal Reserve will report on industrial production for September. And there are more earnings reports due out today, including Bank of America. They'll release quarterly financial results before the market opens. Netflix and United Continental Holdings will report after the market close. We'll be watching United Continental Holdings earnings very closely today, a Chicago-based stock. Their stock has also been down this morning pre-market by as much as 1.5% already. Some others reporting today include Wintrust, Center States Bank, also today Del Taco Corporation, Lennox International, and Hasbro Incorporated, the toy company, reporting earnings today. Just some of the things that could happen and drive the markets as we move forward today on the Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Monday, October 17th.